Hi, and welcome to the Magazine Rack. I'm Chris. I'm Michael Prinz. Today, I'll be reading from Kiplinger Personal Finance, the June edition. The first article today is written by Sandra Block on page 54. It's titled, Five Ways to Catch Up on Retirement Savings. If you're in your highest earning years, you can make up for lost time. You've no doubt heard from multiple sources, including Kiplinger, that the key to retirement security is to save early and often. Thanks to the value of compound interest, even small contributions to a 401k or other retirement savings plan when you're starting out will add up significantly over time. However, there's math and then there's reality. Young workers have multiple demands on their finances, from student loan payments to the rising cost of childcare. It's not unusual for individuals in their 20s and 30s to put their savings on hold or to limit the amount of their contributions until those obligations begin to diminish and they reach their highest earning years. But just as it's never too late to start strength training, it's never too late to save for retirement. Here are some strategies you can use to turbocharge your savings. Catch up contributions. The easiest way to ramp up your retirement savings is to make catch-up contributions to your 401k or other employer-provided plan. In 2024, if you're 50 or older, you can contribute an extra $7,500 in addition to the $23,000 maximum 401k contribution, for a total of $30,500. If you have a traditional IRA or Roth IRA, you can contribute an additional $1,000 beyond the standard $7,000 limit for those younger than 50, for a total contribution of $8,000 in 2024. If your employer-provided plan offers a Roth 401k, and most large plans do, consider dedicating at least a portion of your catch-up contributions to that account, especially if you already have a large balance in a tax-deferred plan. Although contributions to a Roth 401k are after-tax, withdrawals are tax-free, as long as you are 59 and a half or older and have owned the account for at least 5 years. And you can contribute to a Roth 401k regardless of your income level. By contrast, to be eligible to contribute the maximum amount to a Roth IRA in 2024, your modified adjusted gross income with certain deductions added back, must be less than $146,000 if you're single, or less than $230,000 if you're married and file jointly. Contributions before phasing out above those amounts, and you can't put any money into a Roth IRA once your income reaches $161,000 if you're single, or $240,000 if you're married and filing jointly. In the past, you had to take required minimum distributions from Roth 401k plans when you reach the age that triggers RMDs for traditional IRAs, and 401ks, currently 73, but the law known as Secure Act 2.0, a broad package of changes to rules governing retirement and retirement savings plans, eliminated that requirement, effective this year. Starting in 2026, some workers who want to make 401k contributions may have to put some of them in a Roth 401k, whether they like it or not. A provision in Secure Act 2.0 will require workers age 50 or older who earned $145,000 or more in the previous year to funnel catch-up contributions to Roth 401k plans. The change was originally scheduled to take effect this year, but the IRS postponed implementation of the rule after plan providers and employers, particularly those who don't yet offer a Roth 401k, said they needed more time to prepare. After tax contributions. If you're maxed out on catch-up contributions, or you aren't yet old enough to make them, you may want to consider making after-tax contributions to your 401k, assuming your employer allows them. In 2024, you can save up to $69,000 in combined employee and employer contributions, or $76,500 if you're 50 or older. Like contributions to a Roth 401k or Roth IRA, contributions are after tax, but earnings are only tax deferred. You'll pay taxes on them at ordinary income tax rates when you take withdrawals. Given that, you may be wondering why you'd use this strategy instead of simply investing extra savings in a taxable brokerage account, which we'll discuss later. Here's why. With a strategy that has been dubbed the Mega Backdoor Roth IRA, you may be able to convert those after-tax contributions to a Roth IRA, or, if your plan offers one, a Roth 401k. Once the money is in a Roth, earnings will grow tax-free, and withdrawals will be tax-free as long as you're 59.5 and have owned the Roth for at least 5 years. And you won't be required to take RMDs from the account. That's the promised land, says Ed Slott, founder of IRAhelp.com. It's way better off than a brokerage account. Now for the caveats. And there are quite a few. First, your plan must allow both after-tax contributions and what's known as in-service distributions, which allow employees to withdraw funds from their plans while they're still working. While the IRS permits after-tax contributions and in-service distributions, plans aren't required to provide them. Only about 1/4 of companies allow after-tax contributions, although it's more common among large employers. An even bigger hurdle is the IRS non-discrimination rule, which limits the amount some high earners can contribute to their 401k plans. The IRS requires 401k plans to pass certain tests to ensure that the plan doesn't favor highly compensated employees over lower paid workers. Plans are subject to two anti-discrimination tests, one that measures pre-tax and Roth contributions by both types of employees, and a second that measures employer matches, profit sharing, and after-tax contributions. Because highly paid employees are typically the only workers who can afford to make after-tax contributions, it's difficult for many companies, especially small and medium-sized companies, to pass the second test, says Ian Berger, an IRA analyst with IRAhelp.com. These restrictions don't apply to solo 401k plans, which are primarily used by self-employed business owners, Berger notes. Participation in a solo 401k plan is limited to the business owner, and in some instances, his or her spouse, so the anti-discrimination rules don't apply. If your plan allows it, and not all solo 401k plans do, you can make after-tax contributions up to the maximum allowed, and do an in-plan Roth conversion or roll over the funds into a Roth IRA. The mega backdoor Roth has been in the political crosshairs since news reports revealed that PayPal co-founder Peter Thiel used the strategy to shield billions of dollars in shares of a pre-initial public offering from taxes, potentially forever. Lawmakers have proposed prohibiting individuals from converting after-tax contributions to a Roth, but none of the initiatives have been yet enacted into law. Because the mega backdoor Roth is complex and not for everyone, consider consulting with a certified financial planner who has experience working with high-income investors to determine whether this strategy is right for you. Next is brokerage accounts. Taxable brokerage accounts are sometimes overlooked as retirement savings tools because they're, well, taxable. But there are solid arguments for adding a brokerage account to your retirement toolkit, particularly if you've taken advantage of all of the available tax-advantaged accounts. Funds invested in a taxable account are unencumbered by early withdrawal penalties, making them a good option for someone who wants to retire early. Although if you're behind on retirement saving, that may not be realistic. You don't have to take distributions after you reach a specific age as you do with traditional IRAs, and unlike tax-advantaged accounts, taxable brokerage accounts don't come with annual limits on the amount you can invest. Although gains on your investments are taxable, you can take steps to minimize the tax bill. As long as you hold investments in your taxable account for more than a year, gains will qualify for a long-term capital gains rate that's likely lower than your income tax rate. The rate that applies to short-term gains for investments held in your account for 1 year or less. Most taxpayers pay 15% on long-term capital gains, and if your taxable income is low enough, in 2024, $47,025 or less, if you're single, or $94,050 or less if you're married and file jointly, you qualify for a 0% rate on long-term capital gains. Single filers with taxable income of more than $518,900 and joint filers with income of more than $583,750 are subject to the maximum 20% rate. Those with income that falls between the 0% and 20% thresholds pay the 15% rate. When determining how to invest funds in a mix of taxable and tax-advantaged accounts, you can lower your overall tax bill by using a strategy known as asset location. Exchange-traded funds are good choices for your taxable accounts because many are index funds, which tend to generate less in capital gains distributions compared with actively managed mutual funds. Even active ETFs tend to be more tax-efficient than mutual funds because of the way they are structured. Because interest payments from municipal bonds and municipal bond funds are often exempt from federal taxes, and in some cases from state and local levies, munis are also good choices for your taxable account. Meanwhile, other bonds and bond funds are better candidates for your tax-deferred accounts because interest is taxed at your ordinary income tax rate, which could be as high as 37% if you're earning a high income. Sheltering interest-generating investments in your tax-deferred accounts will enable you to postpone paying taxes on that money until you retire and start making withdrawals. Actively traded mutual funds that throw off a lot of taxable capital gains distributions are also better suited for your tax-advantaged accounts. Funds that offer the potential for a high rate of return, such as those that invest in small and mid-capitalization stocks, are good candidates for your Roth accounts because you'll be able to take advantage of long-term tax-free growth. If your goal is to leave a legacy, a taxable account could provide an important component of your estate plans. On the day you die, your investments will receive what's known as a step up in basis, which means the cost basis of your investments, the amount you paid for them, will be adjusted to the current market value. If your heirs turn around and sell the investment, they'll owe little or no tax on those appreciated assets. Health savings accounts. Health savings accounts are primarily viewed as a way to cover your unreimbursed medical expenses, but they also provide a tax-advantaged way to save for health costs in retirement. Contributions to an HSA are pre-tax, or tax-deductible if your HSA is not provided through your employer. Funds grow tax-free, and withdrawals are tax-free as long as the money is used for eligible healthcare expenses. If you have an individual health insurance plan, you'll be allowed to contribute up to $4,150 in 2024. For family coverage, you can contribute up to $8,300. If you'll be 55 or older at the end of the year, you can put in an extra $1,000 in catch-up contributions. To qualify for an HSA, your health plan must have a deductible of at least $1,600 for individual coverage or $3,200 for a family plan. The plan must limit out-of-pocket expenses to $8,050 for self-only coverage or $16,100 for family coverage. If you have enough disposable income to pay for your current healthcare expenses out-of-pocket and avoid taking withdrawals from your HSA, you can get the most out of your HSA's triple tax advantage, says Nilay Gandhi, a certified financial planner and senior wealth advisor with Vanguard Group. As long as you invest at least a portion of your HSA funds in the stock market, an option that most large plans offer, the money will grow tax-free, and withdrawals will be tax-free as long as the money is used for the qualified expenses. You can use HSA funds to pay for medical costs that Medicare doesn't cover, as well as monthly premiums for Medicare Part B and Part D, and Medicare Advantage plans. You can also use distributions to pay a portion of long-term care insurance premiums. The amount you can withdraw tax-free depends on your age. Once you turn 65, you can take penalty-free withdrawals for non-medical purposes, although you'll need to pay taxes on the money. Non-medical withdrawals before age 65 are subject to taxes and a 20% penalty. Unlike IRAs, though, there are no required minimum distributions for HSAs, so you can allow the funds to grow throughout retirement. And on the bottom of page 59, there's a little box, when you're the boss. Use your side hustle to save more. If you have a side gig or your own business, you can funnel more of your income into tax-advantaged accounts, even if you have a 401k plan through your day job. A SEP IRA allows individuals with freelance, consulting, or other types of self-employment income to set up IRAs for themselves and their employees, if they have them. For 2024, you can contribute the lesser of 20% of your net income from self-employment, or $69,000, to a SEP IRA. As long as your SEP IRA and employer-provided 401k are unaffiliated, you can save up to the maximum, including after-tax contributions, in both, for a total of $138,000 in 2024, or $145,500 if you're 50 or older. SEP IRAs don't allow catch-up contributions. Even if you don't expect to invest anywhere near that much in your SEP, the account provides a convenient and tax-advantaged way to supplement your retirement savings. A SEP is straightforward to set up, easy to maintain, and widely available from financial services firms. Legislation enacted in 2022 allows SEP providers to offer a Roth option, but it may be a while before providers make the administrative changes necessary to offer a Roth SEP IRA. Another option is a solo 401k, which is designed for businesses in which the only employee is the owner, and possibly a spouse. The solo 401k has a dual contribution structure. As an employee, you can make elective deferrals up to the standard 401k limit, which is $23,000 in 2024, with catch-up contributions of up to $7,500 allowed for those 50 or older. As an employer, you can also contribute up to 25% of your compensation. The combined total cannot exceed $76,500. If you have a solo 401k and an employer-provided 401k, you can't double up on the employee contributions. Employee contributions are capped at the maximum allowed for employee deferrals, which is $23,000 in 2024, plus catch-up contributions. This rule also applies if you contribute to two employer-provided plans. For example, if you are younger than 50 and contribute $23,000 to your employer-provided plan, you may be unable to make employee contributions to your solo 401k. However, you could still make employer contributions in your solo 401k of up to 25% of your compensation up to the maximum amount. Next, on page 52, we have Bouncing Back from a Natural Disaster, a Kiplinger Advisor Collective by Lynette Calfani Cox. Lynette Calfani Cox is CEO of TheMoneyCoach.net, LLC, author of Bounce Back, The Ultimate Guide to Financial Resilience, and a member of the Kiplinger Advisor Collective, a professional organization for personal finance advisors, managers, and executives. An unprecedented number of major natural disasters struck the U.S. in 2023, with a record 28 weather or climate disaster events incurring losses that topped $1 billion each, according to the National Centers of Environmental Information. The disasters, including Hurricane Idalia in Florida and wildfires in Hawaii, claimed the lives of hundreds of people, and countless homes, businesses, cars, and other personal property were ruined. As we enter the season when natural disasters commonly hit the U.S., now is a good time to review what to do in the aftermath in case you're caught up in one of these events. Put your physical and mental health first. Focus on your physical and emotional well-being. Then concentrate on financial matters. To protect yourself and your family, you may have to evacuate to a designated area or move to a safe location within your home. To cope emotionally, lean on connections such as neighbors, community-based organizations, friends, family, and mental health professionals. Document the damage. Once it's safe to do so, take photos and videos of the damage to your property and belongings. Get estimates for repairs and replacements. And keep all receipts. This documentation is crucial for filing insurance claims and applying for disaster aid. Also, create an inventory of damaged or destroyed items, noting brand names, purchase dates, and estimated values. Save copies of the documentation in online storage or at another safe location. File insurance claims immediately. Notify your insurance company of any property damage or loss. Provide documentation and push for fair reimbursement for repairs, replacements, and temporary living expenses. Understand what your policy covers, what exclusions exist, and how to advocate for your needs. If an initial settlement offer from an insurance company seems low, be prepared to negotiate and provide evidence to justify a higher amount. Get any denials or discrepancies addressed in writing. Apply for FEMA disaster assistance. The Federal Emergency Management Agency provides grants and low-interest loans to help disaster victims recover. You may get assistance with housing, repairs, medical costs, and more. Apply as soon as possible for FEMA assistance online at disasterassistance.gov via the FEMA mobile app or by calling the FEMA helpline at 800-621-3362. Get help from nonprofit groups. Religious groups and community organizations may have funds or volunteers to make repairs to your home, replace belongings, or meet other needs. Seek out a local Red Cross agency, www.redcross.org, which can provide cash assistance for food, clothing, or shelter. You can also contact disaster help groups such as Team Rubicon, https://teamrubiconusa.org, and the National Voluntary Organizations Active in Disaster, www.nvoad.org. Contact utility providers and lenders. Request payment plans, waived late fees, or new due dates if needed. Lenders may offer reduced payments or loan modifications after disasters. Stay in communication with them to avoid any unpaid debt going to collection and damaging your credit rating. Trim expenses where possible. If the effects of a natural disaster are straining your finances, reduce discretionary expenses, such as cable bills and dining out. Try calling providers to negotiate lower rates. On page 53, we have fighting credit card late fees. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has finalized a rule that caps fees for late credit card payments at $8, a significant reduction from the recent average of $32. The rule faces legal challenges from banking and business groups, including the American Bankers Association and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, among other claims. The groups argue in a lawsuit that the rule prevents card issuers from charging fees that are high enough to deter customers from making late payments. Regardless of whether the CFPB rule survives, you can take steps to avoid late payments altogether. Let technology help you, says Matt Schulz, chief credit analyst at LendingTree and author of Ask Questions, Save Money, Make More. Set up alerts through your card issuer's phone app or by email or text message to notify you of upcoming payment due dates. Or implement automatic transfers from your bank account to pay your credit card bill by the due date each month. Periodically, log into your online account to make sure the payments are correctly processed. What to do if you pay late? If your payment is 30 days or more past due, the card issuer will likely share with the nationwide credit reporting companies, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion, that the account is delinquent, and that will damage your credit score. So make sure to pay an overdue bill as soon as possible. The issuer may waive a late fee upon request, especially if you're a longtime customer or otherwise have a clean payment record. Negotiate with your credit card issuer. They don't want to lose you as a loyal customer, says Schulz. Doing another shorter article on page 38, consider mortgage-backed bonds. A mutual fund spotlight by Kim Clark. The housing market remains challenging for home buyers and sellers, but it presents opportunities for investors. Consider securities issued by the Government National Mortgage Association, known as Ginnie Mae, which backs bonds made up mostly of pools of mortgages on single-family homes. Ginnie Mae securities are guaranteed by the federal government, meaning investors can count on getting their principal back. Over the past 20 years, mortgage-backed securities have typically yielded half a percentage point more than similar treasury offerings, says Rob Hayworth, a senior investment strategy director for U.S. Bank Wealth Management. Vanguard GNMA, symbol VFIIX, sports a low expense ratio and ranks in the top third of its category in 3 of the past 5 years. It notched a total return of 5.2% in 2023, compared with 4.3% for an index of intermediate treasury securities. The fund yields 3.3%. If the Federal Reserve cuts rates as expected this year, the resulting increase in the price of the portfolio's bonds, bond prices move in the opposite direction of interest rates, should push the fund to a total return on par with last year's, says fund manager Brian Conroy. On page 40, we have Get In on Japan's Rally, an ETF spotlight by Kim Clark. After years of stagnation, the Japanese stock market is booming again. The Nikkei index of 225 large Japanese companies finally surpassed its 1989 peak in mid-March. It has returned 13% in the first 3 months of 2024, outpacing the 10.6% return for the S&P 500. This is still the early stages of a rally in the world's second largest stock market, says Ben Powell, chief Asia-Pacific investment strategist for the BlackRock Investment Institute. A smidgen of inflation has replaced the deflation that long sapped the Japanese economy, allowing companies to raise prices and profits. It's hard to exaggerate the impact that has on equities, Powell says. Japanese stocks are trading at about 16 times expected earnings, lower than the S&P 500's price-earnings ratio of almost 22. Data is from March 31st. You may own Japanese stocks already if you hold an international index fund. Japan makes up almost 17% of Vanguard's total international stock, symbol VXUS, $60, a member of the Kiplinger ETF 20, the list of our favorite exchange-traded funds. For deeper exposure, consider a fund focused on Japan's small companies, which should disproportionately benefit from an improved domestic economy. WisdomTree Japan Hedged Small Cap Equity, symbol DXJS, $33, is hedged against fluctuations in the yen, so you don't have to worry about currency swings. The fund holds shares in 726 Japanese companies, which have an average market value of about $1 billion. WisdomTree also offers an unhedged version of the fund, Japan Small Cap Dividend Fund, symbol DFJ, $77. Both charge an expense ratio of 0.58%. And that's going to do it for this installment of the Magazine Rack. I've been reading the June edition of Kiplinger Personal Finance. I'm Michael Prinz. So long, until next time.